und herzlich willkommen bei Multilingual Stories. Mein Name ist Dr. Bettina Gruber und ich bin die Linguistin. Ich unterstütze voller Begeisterung mehrsprachige Familien mit Herz und Verstand auf ihrem individuellen Weg, damit ihre Kinder alle Familiensprachen erfolgreich und mit Leichtigkeit lernen können. In meinem Podcast bekommst du sehr persönliche Geschichten von Mehrsprachigkeit aus der ganzen Welt zu hören. Lehn dich zurück und lass dich inspirieren.
Hello and welcome to the next episode of Multilingual Stories. I am super excited today to have Jerry Jones from the Culture Blend as my guest. Jerry is the owner of the Culture Blend. I love the name, by the way. He's a trainer and a coach and works in a multicultural setting, and he currently lives in China. Jerry, where do you come from? How did you end up in China? Tell us.
Yeah, that's a great question to start with. I'm excited to be here, by the way. I'm looking forward to this conversation. So I grew up in right in the middle of the United States in a very rural context, very monocultural, very monolingual. Language was something that we took as a class. It was like math and science, and that was as far as most of the people around me got with learning a new language. I spent my entire life there growing up. I remember there was one day that my father came home from work, and I overheard him having a conversation with my mother about a job that had been offered to him in Brazil. And it was like the most exciting day of my childhood. I was something in me that was just like, this would be so cool. I would love to move to Brazil. I had already moved in my head.
Wow.
And found out years later, I was talking to my dad. He's like, yeah, we didn't even consider that. It just came up. It was a conversation. The conversation was, hey, we're not moving to Brazil. But in my head as a kid, there was something that really was exciting about that. And it was kind of my wannabe TCK moment. I dreamed of that. And I always dreamed about places. I knew they existed. But I think there was this mental cultural block. It's like people where I come from don't do that. They don't move abroad. You know, they maybe go on vacation somewhere in the Caribbean. You know, they go to Mexico, but that's it. And so that was my experience growing up. And then in college. Met this girl who's my wife now, 24 years later, and she'd grown up very much like me, but she'd been out of the country a little bit, and so we explored that together. And then in 2003 we adopted our daughter from China. Mm-hmm. And that was we'd done an internship in Taiwan for 6 months, and that was my first time in mainland China. And then in 2006 we moved to China. We've been in three cities since then, and four if you count moving back to the U.S. We moved back to the U.S. for about 2 years, and it's been wonderful. It's been amazing, and it's been challenging and really, really hard. That's the nutshell of my story.
I need to dig a little deeper here.
Yeah, dig.
I need to dig here because, I mean, I find it fascinating that, you know, you describe yourself as you grew up in your rural states, and yeah. Like you never left the country basically. And now you actually work as a coach and a trainer for multicultural settings like that. That's a huge leap. You know, you describe this dream somehow that you fulfilled yourself, but yeah. I'm missing a few steps in between, like.
Right. Yeah, and maybe I am too. Like, I don't know what it was in me that even from early childhood, there was a fascination with culture. I absolutely loved digging into what makes us different, what makes us the same, and then what happens when groups of those people interact with each other. And so I did. I did my undergraduate in international studies and did a master's degree in the same. And it just really, really, there has always been a fascination in me about what happens when cultures blend, you know, when they come together and the challenges that come with that, but also the opportunities that can be seen in that. And I love it. Like one of my favorite things in the world is to be in a new country. That's like that first day walking around and just taking it all in and realizing I don't get it yet. Like I don't understand any of this. But just to be fascinated by it. I love airports. I love watching people. And then I love digging down deeper into that, you know, meeting people and having the conversations and working through the, whether it's a language barrier or a cultural barrier. I really enjoy digging into that. And I realized, I think, as we moved to China, that was my passion, that I really enjoyed that. And I started off working with Chinese students. So it was, we were teaching English, but it was part of my job was to develop curriculum for international Chinese international business employees, people who were going to either travel abroad or work with international companies. And so I got to develop kind of a cross-cultural training course and a language acquisition course. And
that was your language. So
fun. Oh yeah. Yeah. It was so fun. It was so fun to watch them because them coming from possibly even a more monocultural place than I had come from. They had come from rural China and many of them had never, you know, worked with, listened to, really encountered foreigners before. And so, it was so enjoyable to really build those relationships and see what it was like for them to see my culture from their perspective and to get a glimpse through their eyes. And I just never looked back. I continued to dig into that and still love it every day.
So what I find absolutely fascinating about this whole story is something that you just mentioned it in a side note, actually. So you speak from your heart and you're so fascinated and, like, you know, it's so tangible how much you enjoy all this and how curious you are about this whole topic. And then in a side note, you say, yeah, well, you did a master's and an undergraduate in international studies. Like, right. You built the foundation. Like there seems to have always been this fascination. And then, while you also, you know, you gave it some basics by going to college and give it some foundation. I find that amazing because, you know, you barely talk about that, but it's there obviously. And
that's such an interesting conversation because I rarely look back at college as the thing that really helped that blossom. But I think it did lay a foundation and it gave me the framework. It gave me some of the tools that I used as I moved into a cross-cultural setting that really did chart the course for the ability to soak that up and to just be a learner. That was a big piece of it. But it was like that was classroom and then there's life.
Yes.
Right. And that is the function of the classroom though. Like it charts the course for us. It kind of makes that path doable.
Great. Yeah. So if I have the timeline in mind correctly, then the actual move into a cross-cultural setting for you was the adoption of your daughter, right?
That was not the move. That was a 2-week trip that we took. It was the first time we had seen mainland China. We traveled around a little bit, kind of got a taste for it. And I think at that point we knew that we were headed overseas. We were preparing to move overseas. We thought that we would go to Taiwan just because we had been there. We spent about 6 months there in college. And, but then we, you know, we traveled around a little bit and said, yeah, I think we could do this, you know, we could live here. And then that began the process. We wanted to have a little bit of time with our daughter just to become a family and have the stability, be around grandparents. And so we, for a couple of years, we stayed in the States after we adopted her. And then in 2006, we moved to China.
How old was she when you adopted her?
She was 9 months old.
She was a baby still. Beautiful.
Yeah, definitely.
But that was the transition for your family to become a multicultural family, basically, yeah, by adopting your daughter. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you adopted her, you already had this path in mind that you would also move to her home country, basically, or in the direction of her home country.
Right. Was
there a connection between the two, or was that coincidence, so to say?
Yeah, I think our time in Taiwan was that first opportunity to really connect with Chinese culture and Chinese language, people, and we knew that we loved that. And I think that was the connection when we started thinking about adoption. We knew that we were pretty international people, and so it would probably be an international adoption. And it was a pretty easy jump to say, we already love China. We love the culture. We love the people. Why would we not do that? And so that drove us to adopt from China. And at that time, that was there were a lot of Chinese adoptions. Things have slowed down some since then, but it was a quick decision. And then being there, you know, being in I think we went to three or four cities. And just got to see what real life looks like. It was that jump from, like for me, has happened so many times, especially coming from a monocultural place. Like you read books, you watch movies, you form an idea about what a culture looks like, but then you step into it and you get to see it and smell it and taste it and then it becomes real. And so that was our first experience, really. At least in this part of the world, and so it was a big shift for us.
And I mean, there is a huge cultural difference between the States and between China, right? I mean, I've lived in different countries too, but right. I think the biggest culture shock I had was moving from Austria to the Netherlands, which sounds really funny. And I think I had the shock because I expected to find something that's close to home, mm-hmm. and then I had to realize, no, this is nothing like a home. But I mean, still, the difference is never gonna be like moving to China. That's
and
different setting.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. Like that, sometimes that massive gap. It's just like, okay, I expect this and this and this. Everything is going to be different, and so there's no shock. When it is, you still have to wrestle through the challenges of those differences and figure out how to navigate that. But when it feels like it's supposed to be the same thing or similar, and then because those differences then are layers deep, right? Like they're under the surface, but they're still there. And just because we're saying things in the same language doesn't mean that we're thinking the same thing and so there's a lot of translation that still needs to
happen. Well, there is not the same language between the Netherlands and Austria.
Right. But the cultural similarities, right?
So your daughter was 2 years old when you moved to 3 years old? Between two
we
and
moved
three
right years before she right before her third birthday, just a couple months before her third birthday.
Did she go to any daycare when you moved there? Did she get in touch with Chinese, with the language immediately?
Yeah. We had a house helper that first couple of years who helped with her and spoke a lot of Chinese to her. She actually went to five schools before she graduated kindergarten because there were a couple of different daycares. I think two of them, there was a Chinese daycare that she went to. She went to an international school for a little bit. Then she went to it was kind of an international school. It was Chinese run, and they spoke English for half of the day, Chinese for the other half of the day. And it was so fun because we we had the Christmas program that year, and all of the parents, of course, were standing around, and her line was, "Hi, my name is Rachel, and I'm 5 years old." And when she spoke, and she's always been very well spoken, like her English is really good. She's just always been a very smart, well-spoken kid. But when she spoke in this really thick Chinese accent. And it was like her second language was bad English, because that's what she listened to all day. But in her mind, she would just, like, she knew how to say the line in perfect English, but this is how she was learning it at school. And she was able to kind of switch and speak the language of the people who were teaching her to speak the language that she already spoke.
That is so funny. So, yeah. So basically she speaks American English, mm-hmm. Chinese English.
And then she was learning Chinese as well.
And Mandarin Chinese, I suppose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How old is she now?
She's 16.
Wow. So you've been living in China for a really long time.
Yeah. Close to 14 years. In 2009, we took a trip back. We thought that we were going back for 5 months just to see family and kind of reconnect a little bit. And during that time, we adopted our son from the U.S. And so we went through all of that process, all of the, you know, the court dates and everything that goes with that. It was very fast, like from the time we decided to the time that we had him in our arms was 3 months.
Wow.
I mean, which is super fast for
That's
an adoption.
Amazing.
But then you have to do all the final work and all of that. So about 4 months later, then we came back to China. And so we spent about a year there, most of 2009 we were in the States. And then in 2013, we repatriated, went back to the States and thought we were done. And 2 years later, we were back in China.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I suppose your daughter is fluent in Chinese.
You know, I would say this is really interesting. I would say, she does well. She is, strong conversational. She reads a lot more than either of us do. She knows a lot more than she says, but a couple of things have been really interesting in her language development. She's grown up in an international school. So every day is English, her friends speak English. So she doesn't have a full on everyday exposure. She's been in class all of her life. And so she knows a lot. She's also incredibly introverted. And so sometimes we're surprised to hear her say things that we just didn't know she knew. Because she will not put herself out there. The other piece, and I think this has been instrumental, is that ethnically and by appearance, she's Chinese. And so she has grown up with this from the time she was just a little girl. Like, we will get on the bus, people will gather around us, you know, not because of her, because of us. But they'll talk to her because she looks Chinese, so she must speak Chinese. And they'll ask her, you know, who's your mother? Who's your father? And she'll roll her eyes and point at us. And adoption is just not it's not understood quite in the same way between the two cultures. And it hasn't been a mainstream thing in the past. And so especially for older generations, it's fascinating. And there's not, culturally, there is not that that barrier that would say it's rude to dig into your personal affairs here. And so they just start asking her questions. You know, it's impossible. They don't even look like you. Your hair's so black. You look like a Chinese girl. Aren't you Chinese? And so she has pulled away from those conversations a little bit. And it's just been a whole different learning experience. Right. Just been different for her than it has been for us. We get in a taxi and say hello, and the taxi driver says, "Whoa, your Chinese is so good," right? But if she doesn't say it perfectly, they wonder what's wrong with her, right? Like, why don't you speak Chinese? And those, you know, I think that has It's just certainly not really motivational to realize that you're never going to be able to say it right. And so, you know, I wouldn't call her fluent, but she's definitely conversational and she's worked hard to get where she is.
This feels a little bit like she was constantly confronted with the fact that she's neither completely one of them nor one completely one of you.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. And she can't escape it. You know, she's not a hidden immigrant. You know, there's just this shock. And still today, like we went to Starbucks last weekend, and there was some special offer. They were trying to upsell us on something, and I go to the counter and I do the talking and I have the conversation. But the girl behind the counter will not look at me. Like she instantly looks to my daughter, and my daughter hasn't said a word. She just assumes that she's the translator for me, and that happens all the time. So sometimes I'll jump in there because I know it's making her uncomfortable, and it's a very interesting dynamic. I think it is. It's been in some ways a barrier to language learning for her. And she's certainly, as anyone would, has gone through, you know, highs and lows connected to that. And there've been times when she loves that part of her identity and other times that she struggles with it, just like the rest of us, you know, we all have those elements that we struggle with.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's probably just more visible with her.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she has a brother. Who's American?
Yeah, right.
So, how old was he when you adopted him?
He was 2 days old. Straight from the hospital. There was a 48-hour waiting period, and we brought him straight home. Yeah.
And how old was your daughter at that point? I lost track of the years.
Yeah, she was 6, I believe. When he was born. And then he was 4 months old when we came back to China.
How's his Chinese?
His interestingly, is good. He struggles with learning in class.
A lot of people do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do too. He's full on relational and he's very extroverted. He's the two of them are polar opposites. They just process life differently. They engage differently. And so for him, it's been neat to watch how that classroom stuff, kind of like with me in college, you know, like it has laid a foundation and he understands how the language works and grammatically how it's set up. But it has been really neat to watch him as he engages with his friends and even, you know, through this COVID experience has been a lot more engaged with people around the neighborhood and his language has continued to grow. So he does all right as well. Most of us, like all of us, we do okay. There's still so much to learn. It's a hard language. We've laid out our excuses as well, you know, but we've gotten around and we've lived very comfortably in China. We've made great friends and had some great experiences, and we could have learned a lot more language. Absolutely.
Well, but I mean, one of the factors that play a huge role with how well you develop your languages is how motivated you are. And you Absolutely. Told me that you work in an international setting. So you work mm-hmm. in an international school. Your kids go to an international school.
Yeah.
So your everyday language is still English, even though you live in a
yeah.
country.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. that kind of, you know, puts a lid on the motivation.
It does, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to me. I was thinking about this as I was getting ready to have this conversation. There's a guy who lived here who worked in the school. He was a teacher in the school that my kids go to. About my age, he grew up in the same city that I came from in the States, actually. Very similar background, very monocultural.
Fascinating.
It was just a complete fluke.
We say the world is a village when something like
it is. It absolutely is. Yeah, and he went. We both went to. There were two small private schools in my town. It's not a big town. And he went to the other one, and so we had these really parallel experiences. And I was just thinking about his language is outstanding. His Chinese language is phenomenal. He was in China for less amount of time than I was, or have been. But he was so motivated by what happens when he gets it wrong. Like he hated to get it wrong. And he would just, so if he got it wrong, that drove him right back to his books, right back to the apps, right? And he would work and work and work until he got it right. I wanted to get where I was going. And so as long as I could get to the store, as long as I could get there, I was satisfied. And then I would do my work with people who spoke English, but we were motivated by different things.
Yes.
And his language far, far, far exceeds mine. Like it's been incredible to watch him. Yeah.
This is such an interesting point, and it basically confirms what I always like to do with the families that I work with, because one of the very first tasks the families get from me is they need to decide what their goals for their languages is.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Is it enough for the children to be able to speak to the grandparents and the relatives, or do they want them to be in an academic setting eventually, to go to school? Those are very different goals for the language, and depending on the goals you have, you need to adjust the strategy that you follow. You were happy. I mean, you were happy with being able to shop and being able to have a conversation with the neighbor. That was not enough for him. He wanted to really get it right.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have, you know, our understanding, our direction, our approach has shifted and changed and over our experience in China. And we've had a wonderful experience, and we've made great friends, Chinese and expat. It's been rich and good. And absolutely there are things that we could have done, right? There are relationships that we could have gone deeper with if we were better at this language, if we understood more. But we're overall satisfied with this experience.
Did this friend of yours, does he have children? Does he have a family?
He actually has 6 or 7 children, I think, which is, yeah.
Because my guess would have been, well, maybe he didn't have any kids. And so he
could No. I think he started learning maybe before or while his oldest kids were younger. He dug into those. And he also, I believe that he worked in spaces where Chinese was more a part of his everyday language early on. But then he also discovered that he really loved it, you know, and that he was good at it, and that he could have access to different layers of relationship. And so, like, he absolutely connected with the national staff on who all spoke English. Like, they all were able to communicate with me, and I could have good and what I thought were deep conversations. But when you speak a heart language, you can go layers deeper. So he was a great example of that.
Now I have a completely different question, just because I'm really curious. How on earth did you learn the tones?
Oh my. I learned, so I think there are multiple answers to that.
Maybe I should explain, maybe not everybody knows what that means. So Chinese is a tonal language. That means, maybe Jerry can give us an example, because I can't, obviously. Basically, it means that the same combination of sounds can mean something completely different if you say it in a slightly higher pitch. And I think Mandarin Chinese has 3, am I right?
Four tones.
So depending on how high your voice is, you know, just the meaning of the word changes. So
it does,
somebody who doesn't know that kind of language is at a complete loss at the beginning, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's the culprit behind so many faux pas and mistakes and misunderstandings, and it's hard. And so, like, the first answer to the question, how did I learn that, is I learned how they work. You know, we had a tutor our first year who explained there's a first tone, second tone, third tone, fourth tone. But then it's a matter of attaching those four tones to every word that you pick up. And some things sound exactly the same in my mind. one of the biggest challenges was when you're learning a language, it's very natural at least for English speakers, to change your tone to ask a question. So she says, and I say, ma, like I'm asking, like, am I saying that right? No, you changed the tone. And so you actually changed the word because you were asking a question. And so, like, getting that out of your head, mimicking and really digging into how all of that works. So I learned how they work. And then it was just rote memorization and practice and mistakes. But also, yeah, I didn't. My tones are off all the time. And so I rely heavily on context of the conversation and the fact that I'm a foreigner. So if they're looking at me, they know that I'm saying things wrong. I mean, my accent, everything about this conversation is me saying it wrong. I'm hoping we can get to the meaning of what I'm trying to communicate.
So a little background here from the linguistic point of view is, so when we learn our mother tongue or our mother tongues, there is this certain point where the system is basically fixed in our head, like cognitively in our brain, this is stored, and it gets this is it. This is what language looks like. This is what language sounds like. This is what you need to expect. And there's a very good reason for that. So as grown-ups, we might find it really frustrating that it's so hard to learn a foreign language, but there's a really good reason behind it, because, you know, we need to function in our mother tongue every day and, you know, in suboptimal circumstances as well. Like, I think everybody, I don't know, did you have those foreign language lessons where you had those listening comprehension exercises where they play a tape of, when I was in school, it was a tape, and you get this station announcements with the trains in the background or airport announcements, and you still need to understand what they're saying. Yeah. Because if you can do that, that shows that you have reached a certain level in the language.
Right.
But language is not just what we produce. It's also what we hear and what we process and what we interpret and what we understand. So that's also part of knowing a language, understanding the language. Now with the tones, the funny thing is that in the beginning, you probably didn't even hear them. You didn't hear that there was a difference, like a four-layer difference.
Yes.
Maybe you heard a difference between the first and the fourth, but you probably didn't hear the difference between the second and the third.
Right. Yeah, no, it was, early on, that was the most frustrating part of language learning. Like, our teacher would be trying to teach us just a simple word. She'd E, and I would say E. She'd say, no. E, E, no. E. Yeah, that's it. You know, and then you get it, but you have no idea how you got it right. Yeah. You didn't even, like, I don't know what I said differently than I said the other 30 times. And then she'd say it again, and I would be wrong again. And for a Chinese teacher, it's so natural, right? Like, it's just, you're saying this wrong, so say it right. For me, I'm like, did you understand what I said or not? Did we get to the point? If we did, then let's move on. And so it was very, very frustrating. And continues to be. But we've gotten into we live in a world now where we know what we know and we know what we don't know. And so we can take what we do know and form the conversation around that. And when we get to the point where we don't know, we just say, we don't know. And talking on the phone is absolutely painful.
Oh my God, that's a different challenge.
Yeah, because you can start the conversation fairly well, which says, I speak Chinese. You know, the understanding is, okay, you speak all of Chinese. And so then they just go on and keep going. And so we, like a lot of times we end that conversation with, I'm sorry, I'm a foreigner. And that's it. That's enough for them. They're like, oh, okay. And they either hang up or they have somebody call us back.
Okay. Because a lot of them probably don't speak English.
Yeah, it's not standard for, I mean, there are certainly people study English. Most people on the street, most people that you would do business with, you know, have some level, which means, you know, a few words. It's not, English does not help you be functional in most of daily life. There's plenty of people who speak English and who are fluent in English. But just in the day-to-day, everyday person, there's a barrier there for sure.
So there's a big change ahead coming for you in your life, right? You're about to move to China and you're about to move to Malta.
Yes, right. Yeah.
So Malta, basically, that's English speaking, so that's not going to be an issue. Do you have any plans about how to keep Chinese alive, especially for the kids?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think part of the answer to that is we will see what the community looks like when we get there. You know, I'm hopeful that we'll be able to make some Chinese friends. I know that there are lots of expats. There are lots of people from all over the world in Malta. So if you're watching this and you are Chinese from Malta, look us up. We'd love to. We've established a network of what I call lifers, lifers are the people that if you get in proximity to them again within a few hours or you know, a certain amount of money, if that's the only barrier between you and them, then you'll get there, right? You will invest, you will sacrifice to see those people again. And so I'm thrilled with our network of people who are all over the world, and many of them are in China. We look forward to seeing those people again. I don't think this will be the last time that we are in China. This is a big piece of our life, and it's been a big piece of our life. It has been our lives for a long time. And so we absolutely want to keep that alive and keep those connections going as well.
Beautiful. Now, this has been a very long conversation, and I think we could keep going for hours.
Yeah, we could do this for a while. This is fun.
But I still, for this time, I would like to conclude with the question that I always conclude with, and you will probably have a lot to say about that too, since it's such a big part of your life. So how do you see this whole multicultural life, this crossing, blending cultures relate to the big questions and issues of our time, like climate change, like refugees?
Yeah. It's huge. It's everything. Like it is, those are global issues, right? Like the issues that show up on the news every night are issues that are, they're just not bound by borders anymore. They're not one group's problem. And so I am super excited about multilingual, multicultural, multinational people who not only like me, like I have learned it on top of my foundation. My foundation was monocultural, right? It was, and there were some big barriers for me to shift my mind to be able to think in different ways and to connect with people. But my kids, when they, you know, when I heard Brazil, I don't know what I thought, you know, maybe soccer, maybe I had no frame of reference for that when I was a kid. But my kids think about the other students that they have gone to school with from Brazil, right? Like, of course they think soccer as well, but they have relationships. When they look at the map, they don't see stereotypes. They see people, and they've got relationships with people from all over the world. I think about it in these terms, like when I learned about world systems, political world systems growing up, I learned about them from other monocultural people who had very strong opinions and ideas and very small frames of reference that had come from the political background of our country and only our country. So I learned about communism from people who felt like that was enemy number one. Right? My son 2 years ago was chosen to represent, I love this, he was chosen to represent South America in a huge summit where President Xi came to our city. Vladimir Putin was there, Prime Minister Modi, and the leaders, the heads of state from, it was 14 or 16 countries. It was the leaders of more than half the world's population. He spent 6 weeks preparing for this enormous, it was a huge program that they did. I mean, there were dancers and lights and fireworks, and they changed the landscape of the city. It was incredible. My son learned a little bit about communism by performing for some of the most powerful communist leaders in the world. I don't think he's ever going to choose communism as his political party. He probably won't. I really doubt it, because he's grown up with us, right? But when you have, like, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, when you need two people to come to the table and to talk about differences in political systems and to try to find solutions for the world's problems, who do you want? You want me, who was planted with no, 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 or the other guy who is parallel to me, who grew up over here, where the U.S. was enemy number one? Like, we can't come to the table and talk about those things. But my kids can, because they can actually think from the perspective of other people, and they realize that this is a multilingual, multicultural world that we live in. And those are the people that I want leading the way and solving the problems as we move forward. I think it's so I am absolutely excited about multicultural life, people growing. I think it is one of the most beautiful experiences that you can have, that you can give your kids. And I think we are setting them up to lead us into the future.
This is absolutely beautiful. This gives me goosebumps, and this is exactly what I work for. This is exactly what I'm here for. Yeah. This is exactly what I work for, and why I'm going out there, and why I'm doing this podcast and social media and everything for this. Thank you so, so much, Terry, for sharing your story. It was absolutely amazing, and I love this conversation. I hope everybody else is going to enjoy it as much.
Good. Yeah, it was so fun. I really appreciate this time. This is a great conversation, and we could keep talking for hours.
Absolutely. I think we have to do this again for
another time.
Thank you so much.